Hello, and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 436. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me as always is Emily Soden.
Hello.
Hello, how are we doing on this week of GDC?
We are good, because we are not there.
The correct answer. Yes, GDC is happening, full swing. It's probably over now, actually, now I think of it. But we've had our boy Rick, editor Rick, out there doing all the coverage. He's got a diary up on Pocket Gamer, and he's going to be bringing back lots of game coverage as well, as I understand it. Apparently that's what you do when you go over there. You go and look at games and play them and then tell other people about them. It's called, was it journalism?
No, that doesn't sound like a worthwhile job.
Yep, just playing games, that's the important thing, which is good, because it's been an interesting old week in terms of news and releases. It's been weird watching it all from afar, frankly, because you've seen lots of announcements going up over GDC, a few of which we'll be talking about, but then alongside it, they've just decided to go, screw it, Battle Royale, let's have it right now. Last week we talked about Fortnite coming out in beta, and PUBG also being in beta, but they've just decided to double down on it this week with, no, we'll just launch PUBG. It was only in, like, that soft launch bit in Canada for, like, what, a week? 2 weeks?
Not even that, I don't think.
And they just went, bored now. Or maybe Fortnite came out and they went, actually, let's just push the button and set it live, quick.
Yeah, I reckon Tencent kind of just went, where's the launch button? Quick.
They dropped the game out of a plane with a parachute.
Fend for itself upon the App Store.
So, we've got news from GDC, including the likes of Oceanhorn 2 trailers and all the new info covering that. We've got a few bits of info on upcoming Switch stuff, Outlast 2, coming hot on the heels of the release of the original Outlast, and the Banner Saga trilogy is actually going to go over onto the Switch as well. Isn't that nice? We've got new releases, including the likes of full-blown PUBG out in all your countries. We've played loads of it. We've reviewed it. We're going to give you our verdict. Shadowgun Legends has also appeared. First-person shooter. Is it going to take the crown? You know what? It actually might. It's really quite good. We'll tell you about that. Smashing Run, a couple of other things as well. Plus, an interview with Neela Games about their platform jumping adventure, Guru Glue, and the trials and tribulations of being a proper indie where you make games in your spare time and still have other jobs. Yikes. But first, the news. If you listened to last week's show, you will know that Fortnite came out in beta all around the world. Invite only, I'm afraid, so try and get on the list, it's still available. However, despite the fact that it was only available to people who had been brought into the fold via an invite, didn't stop it from making $1 million in the first 72 hours of going live.
Yeah, and you know what? I am not surprised in the least.
Because I'm not heavily involved in the online gaming scene, really, it occasionally flies under the radar just how many people play these things, just how much money these games make. We're exposed to the likes of Supercell and Clash Royale and Clash of Clans, and those being like, oh, it just makes $1 billion a month. You're like, okay. And then you go, hang on a minute, a billion a month? What? Like, the crazy figures that we're dealing with here. And, yeah, from a small group of people invited on mobile, in the space of 3 days, it made $1 million. And this is off a free game that you can play for free with no energy system. But it's just from the in-app purchases.
Yep, literally just all cosmetic things like skins and emotes and, you know, V-Bucks and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
And this, again, ladies and gentlemen, this is why we have in-app purchases. Because they make $1 million in 3 days from a small group of people. Now, you've played this game. Have you, on the PC version, the regular version that you're used to playing, have you spent money? Have you got V-Bucks and got funny hats and that?
You know, I haven't, but the ridiculous thing is I have been so tempted so many times. Like, I can't bring myself to buy cosmetic things for games just because I find them completely pointless. Like, they hold no value other than to look fun. But with Fortnite, it's a completely different story for me. Like, I watch streams and there's new events that come up every few weeks and stuff with new skins for whatever holiday is around the season, and I'm just kind of look at them and I'm like, oh, it's a new pickaxe, it's so shiny. And the costumes, it's got a wolf head and a Celtic cape. Oh, Jesus.
Is it because you're invested in your character? Because I assume you're playing the same character. Do you have a bunch of different characters and builds that you use?
It's all random. Like, every time you load onto the game, you might be a woman, a man. Depending on your skin tone, you could be Asian or black or whatever, really.
Okay, I didn't know if you had one character you were built into. Because PUBG, when you fire it up, you've got, like, my default avatar now. Whenever I boot it up, it's the same girl.
Yeah.
But Fortnite's a random thing.
Yeah, totally random. Like, depending on... It doesn't matter where you are in it or what you're doing, you literally just get a cycled random character every single time. So if you brought a skin, that would essentially define you.
Right, I see.
But everyone else has similar skin, so it wouldn't matter that much psychologically.
Okay. But you still feel like tempted. You still feel like you'd quite like to invest a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I never will because I have priorities. And I have bills to pay.
Stuff. Yeah, that's troubling. If you go into the in-app purchase section, the V-Bucks that you can buy, it's got the standard stuff you'd get on mobile where it goes all the way up to, like, you know, £100 where you can buy, like, 10,000 V-Bucks plus 3,500 bonus and all that. So standard stuff, but it's just the game is already massively popular and people have dived straight in and immediately just started buying. This is just the money through the mobile purchases, by the way, this $1 million. This isn't through the PC game and all the other purchases that are made, you know, from other builds. So it just gives you some idea of the scale of it all. So it's safe to say Fortnite's doing all right. The question is whether it will triumph over PUBG when Fortnite is properly released, because as we'll talk about in the out and about section, PUBG has now properly appeared and gone live globally. So the fight is on to see which is going to prove victorious in the Battle Royale battle. Moving away from that stuff, though, back to GDC. As I say, we do have coverage of stuff up from GDC, so go and have a look at it on the site. The big one that, you know, affected us, I guess, most prominently, or the one that was most anticipated by fans of the original game, is Oceanhorn. That made a big splash when it came out. I'm going to say 2015, 2016, something like that, because it was at a time when Nintendo games were never coming to mobile. That would never happen. Remember that time, Em?
I do. I chose a magical time to join, didn't I, back in 2016?
It did. Yeah, just before it all kicked off. So yeah, the idea of Oceanhorn is clearly a Zelda game. It was a Zelda game in all but name, designed for people who played mobile games and as a result would never get a Zelda game on mobile. So this is as good as you're going to get. And you know what? It was a very good version of that. Developed by Cornfox Bros was the name. Really nice, kind of sweet visual style, isometric 3D, very charming, and genuinely fun to play, like, well-balanced. The fact that it was so close to Zelda was kind of, you know, a plus side and a negative point. If you're looking for something original, I was like, oh, you guys are clearly really talented. Could you not make something that isn't such a direct lift of something else? But the caveat was, well, they're doing the Lord's work because you're never going to get Zelda. Now, Nintendo's all over the place. We've got Mario and we've got Fire Emblem and, you know, there's a good chance the next one is going to be Zelda.
Yeah, to be fair, after Mario Kart comes out, the next franchise is Zelda.
Let's see, the Zelda or Metroid, like, they're running out of the big ones. So it's going to happen. And now it's going to be, that's going to make it a little bit trickier, I think, to be like, well, we've just directly ripped off Zelda. When there's another Zelda game sitting alongside it in the App Store. Having said that, it's also difficult not to be impressed by the look of the trailer. So you can see the trailer, which has been uploaded to Pocket Gamer. And whereas the first one was kind of an isometric style in, I guess, the style of the faux 3D Zelda games that you got on the Game Boy, not the Game Boy Advance, sorry, that you got on the Nintendo 3DS. So the more recent ones, like Link to the Past, for example. So it's in the style of the old games, but a bit faux 3D. This one is much more in the style of your Twilight Princess, your third-person modern Zelda adventures. So you've got the main character, who's different, by the way, apparently, charging around what looks to be much more an open world, camera behind you, doing the same stuff, running around, opening chests and getting swords and shields and hacking up beasties and all the rest of it. So what did you think of the look of it?
I'm really impressed with it. We're kind of moving towards more towards this sort of 3D platformer kind of edge anyway. But the fact that it does look so good and that its combat is so detailed, like, that's what I really appreciate from the trailer, is that each of the weapons, I think it looks like, have, like, potential upgrades or special powers or something like that. So it's not just a hack and slash you know, until they die sort of things. Some of the enemies are really hard, so you have to think about what things to use on them to be able to come out swinging.
Yeah, there's a kind of context wheel where you open up all of your various different ammunitions and powers and whatnot. They kind of cycle out, these little circles appear in kind of a sphere around you. And it's pretty slick. It's nicely done. I mean, there was never a question of whether the developers were like good at what they do, because Oceanhorn's a very slick, well-polished, pretty-looking little package. And they've gone further with this one by making it third person. They haven't just done the same game again. They've decided to, you know, expand on it. And very much it reflects the, what am I thinking of? The evolution of the actual Zelda franchise, where it went from, you know, a more isometric top-down thing to a 3D action-adventure. So, yeah, I'm interested to get my hands on it. I'd like to play the damn thing first. We don't have a release date. Apparently, it's still quite a way off.
Yeah, yeah. From the looks of it, it looks kind of similar to the video that they released last year.
Hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we had to wait like another year or two to be able to actually see this out in the market.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll have to wait for more news. But go and check out the trailer. It's really nicely done. It's a full like sort of 3.5 minutes of footage, and we'll see what they come up with and whether it's worth our time or not. Now, if you're a Switch owner, you might have got your hands on Outlast, which was the first-person horror game that came over from consoles and appeared not that long ago, right? You've just done the review for Outlast, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been like 2 weeks, I think.
Is that it? Yeah. Firstly, how did you find it? How was Outlast?
I appreciated it. It was just as good as it was on PC, and I did absolutely poo my pants.
Good. That's the bare minimum of what we expect from these things. So they've done a decent job with the ports, which I guess gives us reason to be excited for Outlast 2, which is coming out on Switch next week.
Hey! At least they, like, dropped it not as a surprise this time.
They gave us, yeah, a little bit of warning. Although Outlast was bundled with the DLC and as a standalone game. This time, they've got March 27th as the release date for Outlast 2. I'm surprised they didn't just jam it together as a bundle.
Yeah, I think it's because they can charge, like, for Outlast 1 and the DLC, $19.99 doesn't seem too bad, but mm-hmm. They're charging $19.99 for Outlast 2 alone.
Well, in the story, it says it's £26.99 for Outlast 2.
Oh, well then. Jesus, I was wrong.
Even more. But then, these kind of games always get a higher price tag on Switch.
Yeah, plus, I mean, it only came out, like, last year, I think. Was it last year?
Yeah, it's comparatively new. So not that surprising. But if you say that it worked, like there wasn't anything noticeably different or any massive downgrades for the Switch version, was there?
Nah, do you know what? It was all really, really well done. Considering, I mean, Outlast 1 came out in 2015, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
God, was it 2015 or was it 2014? I don't remember. It came out a few years ago. And, you know, at the time, the graphics were really good. They were really vibrant and detailed and gory. And moving that over to the Switch, it looks exactly as it was and has aged as such. It doesn't look out of date. It doesn't look advanced, but it doesn't look out of date. And okay. The thing that gets me in the Switch, because of course usually you play the Switch, you have your headphones on, things like that.
Yeah.
Everything, the sound is a crucial part of that game.
Mm.
Sound and light, and they're both done extremely well. And I was playing it initially with my sisters and my mum when I was visiting mm-hmm. home. And every time Miles, the protagonist, breathed, if he saw something really startling or if he was running for a little bit, he breathes really suddenly. And it's okay. So loud in your ears, it just freaks you out.
Splendid.
Yeah.
Good. I should really play these two games on
You really
on the
should. I think
consoles.
You'd enjoy them. You'd probably get bored of them, like, eventually, just because they are the same old cat and mouse chase thing.
Okay.
But the stories and the twists and, like, the little scary details are all really good. There's a lot of jump scares in them, but they're not particularly cheap.
I played the whole of Alien Isolation through to completion, and that game is at least 6 hours too long. So,
oh, yeah.
Despite being brilliant, and I love it, and I want to play it again, it has about 5 endings. So yeah, Outlast 2, 27th of March, that for £27. And very, very quickly, The Banner Saga 3, which is coming out on all platforms this summer, including the Switch. So it's getting the kind of day-and-date launch. And apparently it is also going to get the rest of the games as well.
Mm,
is that
yeah.
right?
Number 1 and 2 are coming out before number 3. So you can carry on your progress, you know, to number 3.
That's good. Because the first two were cracking. Obviously, you haven't played the third one, not out yet. But we covered the both of them. And these are, like, some members of the team who worked on Mass Effect made this one. And it's, you know, text-based rather than voice, but it is this sort of snowy, Norse-like land. And it's got the decision stuff that you got from Mass Effect and Dragon Age and those kind of games where you're having to make tough choices that mean everybody is miserable. Hooray. But it's also balanced that with this quite involved tile-based combat stuff, which is where people got a little bit put off because it is quite involved and hard work. But if you're down for that balance, it's a very, very like evocative thing. It's got a lot of mood and atmosphere. So we're hyped for the third one. And if you're a Switch person, I think it'll suit it down to the ground. The App Store is filled with indie games from all corners and developers around the world. We're joined today by Anton from Neela Games, which is a Danish developer, small studio team who have been working on a couple of games, and most recently Guru Glue, which is set to hit App Stores very soon. Thank you for joining me today, Anton.
Thank you very much.
The game itself, even in the text blurb, you state you've been massively influenced by 16-bit style puzzlers and platformers from back in the day, from the 90s era, I guess, which I'm guessing is kind of your childhood, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. That's our childhood. That's where we come from, our roots.
Okay. And there's a team of four of you guys who've been working on this, correct?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
As I mentioned in the intro, you've got a lot of competition. Anyone who comes to release a game nowadays or chooses to make one and release them on the app stores, the odds are stacked against them in many ways, aren't they? Because, like, you've got just so many other platformers and games vying for people's attention. So what got you guys into doing this in the first place? And secondly, why did you go for mobile as a platform for this game?
We went into it because we love making games, and that's how why we would go to it. And then also with a wish to kind of make new games that are somewhat different. We would like to make some more artful games that are still inspired by the past, but have this artful style to it, or maybe has some themes to it that are a bit more deep. And we chose the mobile platform for very simple reasons, actually. And that was that it's a small format to make mobile games, and that means you can produce mobile games faster. Instead of just putting all your money on one game, you can produce more games faster. So that was more like a strategic choice starting there in mobile games. And then I think it was a cool and interesting way to kind of combine mobile games with these more artful kind of games that we are intending to make now.
Okay, so the game itself is kind of a physics platformer. You take control of a little character who's almost made of like a goo or putty or something, like a little jelly man. And you're anchoring this character. He jumps and he anchors onto a hook and then he spins round and round and round. And you're choosing when to release so that he can then fling and fly onto a different platform or hook and then carry and work his way through and up the levels.
Yeah, so I mean the game is inspired by climbing. Indoor climbing. So the idea was, how can we translate this indoor climbing into a mobile game? And that's really how we came up with this hook. And then the whole theme is about this little guy climbing to the edge of the world to kind of meet his destiny there. So like the overall narrative is this little blue fella meeting his destiny at the end of the world, and you have to, as a player, get him there. So he journeys through this kind of boulder gym, and then he goes out into these mountain area ranges, and he ends up in the sky where he's going to meet his final destiny at the end of the universe. So that's kind of the narrative of the story. But it's inspired by climbing.
Yeah. I was going to say, because the earlier levels, you can see that the grips, if you like, that he's hanging onto and spinning around, they look like those grips you get in the artificial indoor rock climbing.
Exactly. That's the whole point of it, yeah.
So which one of you in the group is the climber? I assume this is a real-life experience thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, that would be me. I'm the real-life climber. I mean, climbing has a lot to similarities with games. I mean, climbing also has this puzzle element of how do I complete this problem that I have in front of me. So I think that was a very interesting thought to have, how you can translate that into a game. And that's also how the puzzle elements in the game like works out.
Gotcha. Okay. You've released a game prior to this as well, one called Tilted, like a local multiplayer game.
Yeah.
Was that inspired by real events of people putting on samurai helmets and
falling over.
Maybe not so much. and chasing each other.
Yeah.
Actually, Tildes is inspiring by this catch. Back in the days when you were a kid, you were playing catch with other kids. So that's basically the gameplay of Tildes, is you have to catch each other.
Okay.
But it's just reversed, actually.
Gotcha. So it's like tag or it or
Yeah.
I see. What I'm really interested in is, especially from small indie developers, because there's often a focus on the big developers or the studios that really break through. So you can look at successes like The Room or Monument Valley or, you know, all of the super studios like Supercell and so forth, churning out games that make millions. But what there are far more of is lots and lots of small indie developers, you know, one, two, three, four-man teams who are sort of working away, making their games, and often like getting by perhaps, or maybe just wiping out and not being successful at all and being forced to quit. How hard was it to get started? Are the four of you working on this full time? Are you all doing other jobs in order to support this as a passion? Like, what's the balance?
So right now I had some money saved up that we could use for just getting by and do some small jobs on the side to just earn money. I mean, what I think is key to success in this industry is just continuing on believing that at one point you're going to have success. I mean, it's definitely hard to make money, and there's so many games out there. So as you said, this is a really difficult landscape to compete in. And you just have to be very aware of that, and you have to be aware that you have to sacrifice a lot of your time, and you should not do it because of the money. You should do it because you really want to make games, right?
Yeah.
And we have this larger goal of, I mean, we are aware that we might not be successful with our first or second or third game, but if we continue, we will eventually learn a lot of things, and we will probably have success at some point. So, I mean, that's how we work, at least, always believing in that at one point we will succeed, right?
Well, famously, the story that gets told about that, about not expecting your first game to be this gargantuan success, is Angry Birds itself, which was like Rovio's 53rd game,
exactly,
I think it was.
Yeah.
And now no one knows what those other 52 games were, because it doesn't matter, because Angry Birds happened. And what you said about making lots of games on a smaller scale, that can prove very successful as well. We look to one of the studios we like a lot, which is Nitrome, who make, rather than making one massive game a year, they make lots and lots and lots of much smaller, more compact games based on some similar kind of mechanics. But what they do consistently is they keep the house style similar. So they're immediately recognizable as Nitrome games, and that kind of helps to establish the brand in your head, if you like.
I mean, we're still pretty new to the scene, so we're kind of like creating our own identity as it is of now. But I mean, I have a background in arts and film, so I have this intention of kind of trying to, again, create these more artful experience or games that are not just about shooting each other or about this conflict, but maybe have some thematics that are a bit different than what you see most of the games have. And I think that's where we are aiming to kind of differentiate ourselves from some of the other games that are out there. And I think like the mobile platform is a super interesting place to do that, because mobile games tend to have this kind of bad reputation, if you like. So I think it's like an interesting combination if you can make this more artful experience on a platform that is not seen very good upon. I mean, Monument Valley is a good example of a game like that, right? It has this more poetic feel to it, I think.
Yeah, which is often at odds with how people think of mobile games, because often they're seen as these very small, light, casual affairs where you're relying on these feedback loops and, you know, checking in for 5 minutes every now and then logging out, and that's what people tend to think. Do you think mobile is a good platform for that, or do you think that people are better suited to consume that sort of stuff through indoor gaming, where you sit down in a room quietly on your own, rather than, do you think people can get the same kind of artful experience like playing it on a train or a bus or something like that?
I mean, people are definitely used to having these more sort of casual experience on mobile games, but I mean, I think this also has something to do with immersion in games, right? How do you feel immersed? Do you need a really big screen to get immersed, or do you need to have these really great headphones on? And like my personal opinion is that if the game is good enough, or if the game is challenging enough, then you don't need to have a big screen or be in a particular setting or something like that. Then you can have like a really great experience just with the game being the game itself.
And how have you overcome the control issue? Because when you're doing something that involves touchscreen controls, it's very important, and it's a recurring theme on the podcast and on Pocket Gamer. Platformers can be tricky on mobile, particularly if you're dealing with left and right controls and floating joysticks and buttons. This looks like more of a one-touch affair, so you can presumably touch to release the character from his swing. So is that the idea? It's a very simple one-touch control system.
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, you see these mobile games for mobile as well that have these really intricate control schemes where you have to do a bunch of things at once. And I think that with mobile, the more simple it is, I think the better it is. Not necessarily, but just in general, I think that you kind of have to design for what the mobile afford in terms of controlling. And I think that like simple mechanics works best for mobile.
As well as players, we have developers who listen to the podcast as well. And in order to get the kind of success that you're looking for, you obviously need to plan ahead. Now, you mentioned that you put some money aside and that you guys work on other things, the four of you, as well as doing the game. So is it a case of saying, right, I'm going to work on these things in the evening, I'm going to allot a certain amount of time per week? How do you manage the like basic day-to-day survival of having to, you know, earn money as well as focus on this work?
So a big part of it, I think, is that we should do the game full-time. I mean, if we lose too much focus on doing other stuff, then we might as well stop making the game. So the game should always be the first priority. And then other work we have to do in the evening. And that's kind of the sacrifice you have to make. If you want to make it, you need to just be sure that the one thing you focus on is the game itself, right? And then let other things come later. And then I also think a major part of it is to have everybody on the same page, that everybody knows where you're going and everybody has a clear idea of where you're going with the game, and feel like they have a part of it as well. Because if somebody doesn't feel they're involved in the game or feel somehow outside, then quickly things can like tumble down. So that's definitely been one of the key points for me.
That's interesting. So making sure that everyone has like a sense of ownership of what's going on.
Okay.
Do you already have ideas for the next games, or have you already started on them?
Definitely. I mean, so what our intention is that we build on our previous experience and the previous technology that we used. So our first game that you mentioned, Tilted, is a ragdoll game. So I think for the next project, we're going to do something with rigged ragdolls and then combine it with an interesting control scheme. And then we are thinking about being inspired by these traditional games that you play when you were kids. Again, we were talking about catch, and then these different types of weird games that you play in the schoolyard. That's at least the idea for the next project. And we slowly started to do some prototyping on that as well.
Gotcha. So Guru Glue is the name of the game. Look out for that. And Anton, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Out and about this week, it's PUBG. We spoke about it last week alongside the release of the beta of Fortnite. Now PUBG is properly out everywhere. We've got the review up. We gave it an 8 out of 10. There's a video review on AppSpy as well. It is good. I have gotten into it, Emily. We were discussing this yesterday.
I know. I told you it was going to get you.
It got me. It got me a little bit. Because the games take about 30 minutes, and it's difficult like not to get invested in that time. It takes 30 minutes if you get down to the last three, like I did twice, but still didn't win, goddammit. And I can see the draw, because you feel like you've learned, you feel like you've improved, you've gotten all that way, the tension really ratchets up towards the end, as the environment closes in around you and there's just a few people left, and then when you do get shot, you're like, God damn it! Because it's like so close in time investment, and you really do immediately want to jump back in and go, right, this time.
So I get it. Like, it's that side of it is very good. I understand the draw to these battle royale games, and it does feel like fun. The way Harry put it in the review, which is right, is it's not like a serious-headed military, like Tango's on My Six military shooter thing, which I find very dry and a bit distasteful. It is dick about in the woods shooter. It's paintball with your mates.
Mm.
It's daft because, you know, you spend most of the time running around in your pants and with stupid hats on, and, you know, it's a silly shooter with sort of slightly militaristic overtones. Obviously, Fortnite's even more silly and cartoony and Overwatchy. And it does, as we said last week, it does suffer from the same stuff that mobile shooters suffer from, i.e. yes, there are too many buttons on screen. Yes, it's a bit twitchy with the touchscreen controls. So it's not as accurate as if you're playing on a PC. That was obviously going to be the case. But apart from that, it is the entire game, and it really just does, just feels right. I mean, you've played the PC version and the other version, and you were saying that it does feel dead similar, right?
Yeah, it really does. Aside from its UI being slightly crowded.
Hmm.
It's pudgy on mobile.
Yeah. Before we send the review.
What else is there to say? It's just my review, like the one line. It's PUBG on mobile, what do you want?
It is. It's what you thought it would be. It's the whole game, controls are a little bit fiddlier, but it does work, and when it works well, it really captures the spirit of it. So they've done a very good job of it.
Yeah.
It's out everywhere. You can download it, knock yourself out. Fortnite is still in beta, invite only, but obviously when that goes live, which I imagine may not be that long, we'll have a look at that too.
Yeah.
However, the other big release of the week, and it is a big release, and probably our game of the week, Shadowgun Legends came out. And it's good.
It's really good.
It's proper fun, and I'm notoriously iffy on first-person shooters on mobile.
Same. I hate them. I can't stand them.
Mm, might be the best one.
Yeah.
I've played.
So far, this is the best one that I've ever played, and I liked it. And that is... Yeah. Possible feat for me.
So they've done the sensible thing again, like with Fortnite, where it's daft. So the angle of this is that it's very Destiny, in so much as it's a hub based thing where you get kicked back to this little mini village city thing. It's all futuristic and daft and sci-fi, and you go to all the different vendors and you can buy weapons from these guys and buy armor from this dude and get jobs from this guy and enter the arena over here, and you even get like the orbs that you can then go and unlock or decipher, like those kind of crystal things or whatever they're called in Destiny, where you decipher them and get new items. So it's well Destiny, but you're a mercenary, and it treats you, again, like Harry says in the review, kind of like a rock star. So the idea is that, like, hey, you can be on the leaderboard and you can go and fight in the arena and you can be number one. There's a big, you know, holographic statue of there of you on a stage if you do really well and stuff. But it's got the right mixture of the colourful sci-fi vibe, and it gives you these sort of shortish missions where you're going in and, like, you know, rescue a dude or use him to unlock a thing or go and blow up or whatever. But it feels really nicely balanced.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I liked about it most of all, is that the missions aren't, like, really, really lengthy.
Mm.
It's like, there's a lot of action in the space that you have, but you're only, I think the missions must be, what, like a few minutes long?
Yeah, yeah.
5 minutes, something like that?
That's right. They're paired right down for mobile. And it's not like you don't do anything, because they keep them in contained-ish environments, but there's verticality. Like, you're going onto your lifts, you're moving up and down these complexes, you're unlocking doors and moving through buildings and going outside, and, you know, you're in courtyards and blowing stuff up. There's a decent amount of variety in the action. Obviously, after a while, yes, the missions do boil down to go here, collect thing, open door, shoot this guy. Like, you know, it's a shooter, what are you going to do? But there's enough difference there to sort of keep you interested. The environments are really beautifully drawn. There's a lot of colourful stuff in it. Like I say, it's even more colourful than something like Destiny. It's really going for that over-the-top daft vibe, and especially when you start buying more interesting weaponry and you unlock the colour kits and you can, you know, customise all your armour and all those bits and bobs. And there's a big old skill tree. There's a lot going on under the hood. And some mobile shooters can be a bit shallow.
Mm. Yeah, they can. And the controls can just sometimes be really clunky.
Mm.
and this feels comfortable. It's Madfinger, by the way. So these are the guys behind Dead Trigger and Dead Trigger 2, which were both huge games in the mobile shooter world. So these guys, they know what they're doing. They've got a lot of form here. And it feels like they've just gotten better and better at refining this mobile shooter thing. What's more, it's free to play, doesn't have any energy system, so you can just keep going and going and going, which again is a very good system. I can see this one really proving to be the most popular shooter on mobile.
Yeah, I definitely can see that as well.
So we would highly recommend it, which is, I guess, rare. And I'm, you know, people will know I'm a bit lackluster on your modern warfares and all that kind of stuff. Modern combat, rather. But no, this is genuinely fun. Really good little loop. Dive in, dive out, shooty shooty. Fun, colourful, lots to upgrade. Shadowgun Legends, free to play, iPhone, iPad, and Android as well. So there are your big releases for the week. A couple of other things. There hasn't been much out, but that's largely because of GDC. Everyone's busy. All the developers are all clustered into one place, hocking their stuff. So often you don't get a lot of big releases here. So those are the two biggies. Meanwhile, Smashing Run came out, which is an auto runner where you're just like left to right, charging through a fairly colourful world. Only two controls, which is jump and dash, which is kind of like a power charge, which lets you smash through obstacles when they appear. It looks fine in a slightly low poly way. It's actually quite nice, but it's just another one of these auto runners where you just jump and charge, jump, charge, jump, charge, avoid the spikes, yada, yada. It's done perfectly well, but it's nothing more than that. And we were just like, eh. John Monday reviewed it and said it's a perfectly fine endless runner in a sea of perfectly fine endless runners.
So that summarizes pretty well, actually, doesn't it?
That is almost exactly what I played. So, yeah, Smashing Run, you can get that out at the minute if you want to. There is another game that I had a quick go at as well called Num Yums. N-U-M and then Yums, Y-U-M-M-S. And this is colour... No, sorry, not colour. This is a number game where you're on a grid, you're this little creature who runs around eating these tiles, eating these pellets on the tiles. You, your creature, has a number on it, and all the different tiles are differently numbered. So in early levels, it's just like 1, 2, 3, 4. They all have different values. And the idea is you have a set number of moves to consume enough tiles to max out your number. So if I've got a number 10 on my head, I have to eat enough tiles that will add up to the number 10. So I'll munch a 2, I'll munch a 2, I'll munch a 3, and then I'll munch another 3, and then, yay, I've added up to 10. So that's how he needs to do it. And that'll be four moves, maybe, because it depends on where the tiles are placed. And so you have to kind of chart your path through the grid, going right, left, right, up, down, and to get the one, then three, then four. And so you're counting the moves you're making, and you're trying to make sure you get the right number that you need to max out your little beastie. If you go over, you go bust, a bit like in 21s in Blackjack. However, unlike Blackjack, where you just go bust, here, your creature vomits up all the tiles it's just consumed and goes, bleh! Which is adorable. So I intentionally did it a couple of times because it was fun. Yeah. It's simple and it's free to play, and it seems actually all right, but I've only played like 15 minutes of it just to give it a bash. But that's out at the minute, also free to play and ad supported, I believe. Num Yums is the name. That's kind of it. Like, you've been playing a few games over 148. Did you play anything else this week that was of interest?
Yeah, I literally just did, aside from Shadowgun and PUBG, I did Death Coming.
Oh, yeah. Did you like it?
I really loved it. I thought it was great. And also, I just finished doing our App Army Assemble for this week. And it was 100% positive feedback.
This is from our little group of readers who are part of the club who get early access to games and then offer their opinions. And yes, they can be hard to please, but everybody liked it.
Yeah, literally. I mean, even some of the ones which are more skeptical of some mobile games than others, or some people who don't like puzzlers as much as other people, everyone loved it.
Yeah, and it is fun.
A testament.
As I said last week, it's got those airs of Hitman where you just like poke the thing and then watch a chain reaction of terrible things happen to some people.
Mm.
And it's really satisfying and charming. So, yeah, that's recommended. We talked about that last week, but go and have a look at that if you fancy Death Coming as a name. that'll do for this week. I think we've got Rick in GDC, but he may be coming back in future episodes. It might be uploaded at a different time next week, because I won't be here on Thursday and Friday, because I'm doing a marriage.
Yeah.
Right on my partner.
Taking.
So, I need some time off in order to do that. So I'm not going to be here Thursday or Friday. So we might have to record early. It might be a slightly different show or a shorter show or something. But I'll try and get something done anyway, because I care.
Yeah, and you know, the taking the next step in life is kind of slightly more important than a podcast sometimes.
Nothing,
you know?
Nothing is more important than my Pocket Gamer podcast listeners, Emily.
No, well, why don't you just take a microphone to your wedding and just kind of fill in the gaps between the I do's, you know?
Yes, hello and welcome to James's wedding. Yeah, no, it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it. But as I say, scheduling might change as a result, but we'll try and get something out. In the meantime, go and play some fun shooters. There are a bunch out right now. Go and have fun. Fill your boots and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
See ya.